is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The European Union. The European Union is guided from Brussels. And I have a quote from a Brussels official noting at this time of year, Ms. von der Leyen, the head of the European Commission, making a speech about priorities for the next year, says this official, not named, this is the FT, last year was all about Ukraine. This year, economic issues will be more paramount. I welcome Judy Dempsey, the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe for the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. She's in Berlin, writing most recently about her disappointment at G20 and now the question about the European Union for the next year. Ukraine is a priority, but it takes a backseat or a side view from the economic issues. I understand, but Judy, if I understand correctly, this is the challenge for Europe, to understand Ukraine and what happens if Ukraine is overrun by the Russians. A very good day to you, Judy. How do you respond to this idea? Last year was about Ukraine. This year it's about economic issues. Are they separate matters for you in Berlin? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John, and thank you for having me on your show. To believe that you can separate them is a kind of self-denial. Ukraine has affected security. It has influenced food prices. It's about energy security. It's about food security. It has touched almost every aspect of the European Union, not to mention what Putin is doing to Ukraine and the threats to Eastern Europe, not to mention migration, not to mention refugees, not to mention displaced people. This is all about the economic issues. It's about energy security and other issues. And to be able to put one element like Ukraine into one box and economy into another, I think is a little bit self-delusional.
And because of this, we need to go to the larger story that you've developed out of the G20, which is the G20 at the end, there was much talk about a joint communique and all the nations working together. But at the end, I was disappointed because the hardest issue was going to be Ukraine and condemning Russia's invasion and its alliance with China and depredations across Europe. You've named some of them. The refugees are a vital part of the future for Europe. What is to be done? Having not solved the Syrian refugees, now have Ukrainian refugees. Your remarks about the G20, where you were also disappointed, but is there a way forward for the G20, or are we now in the time that Brazil and India, the states that haven't chosen sides, are they now the leaders of G20?
The G20 is such an ungainly forum in many ways, and now the African Union is joining, which might not be a bad thing, actually, because they may actually start taking ownership of some of the conflicts and becoming more hands-on in terms of what's taking place in Africa. But this G20 was going down not even to the lowest common denominator. The fact that they wouldn't mention Russia as if they didn't know where Russia was or they were so afraid. And this was in contrast to an earlier communique at Bali some time ago. So this was very, very disappointing. Russia wasn't represented there by President Putin, Chinese leaders stayed away. But why they didn't have the integrity and the honesty to speak out and say what is right and what is wrong. It's about territorial integrity, it's about sovereignty, and it's about one country invading another. And a lot of these countries have enough experience of being invaded by other countries.
And what we have now is a picture of the G20 as not representative of the most powerful and prosperous states. I'm thinking of Europe and the United States. Perhaps all forums that going forward are going to be mixed because you can't exclude Russia and China. But what is to be done? Was there another way to do this, Judy? Is it possible that there could have been, say, a minority position to voice protest about Ukraine? Is that imaginable?
There was an extraordinary amount of haggling behind the scenes to get a communique. And President Modi of India was determined to come out well on this. So he was playing his typical Indian balancing act. But when it comes to balancing act, when you put this up against war, I don't think you can balance and have a weak communique when you don't look at the whole repercussions of the war. And just say an awful lot about the spunk or the lack of spunk and courage of the G20. Diplomats told me we wanted consensus. We didn't want a failure. Well, then don't have a communique. Be honest about the situation instead of backtracking, instead of going for the lowest common denominator. And we get to something fundamental here, the kind of curse of multilateralism, that it goes for consensus even at the lowest common denominator.
In your most recent essay on this matter, you mention Africa's nations watching the G20. You mention all of the states not attending, the smaller states, who take their lead from the G20 and the G7 and other bodies. But the G20 includes a great number of regions that aren't in the G7. So I note that Russia and China, having not been chastised, are now on a level playing field with the EU, the US, NATO, and all these other nations. They paid no penalty for the now coming at the end of the second year of war. Certainly, the EU understands paying no penalty gives them an advantage. I can't believe that you don't have foreign ministries that understand that kind of formula. What about Germany? Did Germany want to chastise Russia and China and held back because of the unanimity clause?
You might as well ask the same thing about President Biden as he faces a re-election, or Japan, or Canada, or Italy, or France, or Britain. I mean, these are big countries that have contributed a huge amount militarily and financially to Ukraine. But this is about the future of Western cohesion and Western values and Western integrity. These are not light words. These are words and values and principles that are being challenged by China, by Russia, by Brazil, and indeed by India, the way it sits on the fence. And I think this is doing no good to the West to be able to stand up and say, this is what's right, particularly now. If we don't say this now, it will actually embolden countries, not only Russia, to continue with their territorial aspirations and imperialist ambitions.
The strange remark by the president of Brazil, Lula da Silva, I believe that Putin can go easily to Brazil, thinking of the hosting of the G20 in Rio de Janeiro next year, 2024. The president went on to say, what can I say to you is, what I can say to you is that if I'm president of Brazil and he comes to Brazil, there's no way he will be arrested. It's astonishing he made that remark. Afterwards, we learned that under his administration, Brazil signed on to the International Criminal Court. Since then, Mr. Lula da Silva has walked back his remarks somewhat, saying he's looking into the ICC. But again, this is an example of how the rest of the world is now told by a very powerful state, Brazil, and a leader of the G20 next year, that Vladimir Putin personally pays no price for his decisions.
Let us see what happens next year. There's no doubt that Lula da Silva will come under huge pressure. Also, he has signed up to the ICC, as you mentioned. And the fact that he says this at the end of this very strange summit in New Delhi says actually which side at the moment he's on. We have 12 months and we'll see what kind of pragmatism or real politics will come into play here. But you have to look at the other side. Do you think President Putin is actually willing to fly to Brazil? Very questionable how this will pan out. But what President Lula da Silva said actually just confirmed his ambiguity towards Russian aggression in Ukraine and his ambiguity towards the West. And also, one does forget his whole background of corruption over the past several years. You wonder actually really how he wants to put Brazil back on the map in terms of principles and element of decency in supporting the West.
You also mentioned that China and India, but in particular India, China's part of the Axis powers, India's not, are doing no good by trading with Russia, buying all that Russian oil and the refined products that come out of the Indian apparatus and the trade with India. So it's not just that Mr. Modi wants to be, I suppose the word is non-aligned or independent of choosing over Ukraine. He's actively supporting Russia's war machine by permitting his industry to buy Russian oil. Is that a concern in Europe that India is siding with Russia while claiming to be independent?
Well, India wants its cake and eat it. Now Modi has changed some of his foreign policy stance with the United States, got closer, more aligned on some foreign policy issues. It's very close with France on security and strategic and military issues, exchanging exercises and other issues. But this is a cultural, political, intellectual aspect of the Indian polity. It's a product for non-aligned. It's a balancing. We don't want to upset our neighbors. We don't want to upset the United States. And you just wonder how long this can continue. But at the end of the day, India does have to take into account what's happening in the Russia-Chinese relationship. And this really does worry India.
Judy Dempsey is the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe, part of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace's publications. Online, you just put your email in and you'll receive many, many documents that help you understand Global North, Global South, and this turmoil caused by the Ukraine war. We're going to turn to a question of the EU. If the G20 can't act together, can the EU, or as Judy asked the question of her colleagues, can the EU be a global player? I'm John Batchelor.